Welcome to the review show on the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool 5, Chelsea 3. Yeah, 3. I'm Dan Morgan. I have Neil Atkinson, Neil Jones, Sean Rogers. It's been a long night for obvious reasons. The Reds lifted the Premier League trophy. I'll say that again. The Reds lifted the Premier League trophy. I'll say that again. Liverpool lifted the Premier League trophy at Anfield. What a night. Sean, it feels... The manager said a couple of times that this is the start. A couple of times he's said it at the end of previous seasons, and he's been right then, and he's probably going to be justified as being right now in time, but it does unmistakably feel like the end of something. It feels like they've closed a chapter on that thing that needed doing.
Yeah, I agree. And what a great night it was. How much, you know, considering the circumstances that it's in, I think all involved couldn't have done much better, really. And what a fun, crazy game of football to watch as well. To we never do things that easy, do we, generally? Although winning the league this year, as Virgil said, by a mile, we obviously have. It's going to be so fascinating. You know, what's going to happen next? I mean, for Neil and everyone at the Anfield Wrap, I don't think you're going to be short on content in terms of what's potentially going to be happening with this club moving forward. Because I think that's as fascinating as where we are. I think it's fascinating in terms of what they do and where they go to next. Because I get the feeling that it could go one or two ways. And, you know, we'll focus on the positive in terms of where that could go. But yeah, very much so. It's been a Herculean effort, hasn't it, from all involved? And I think, you know, look, I don't really watch these kind of trophy presentations because United just ruined it for me in the 90s. But I don't know, for us, it just feels like it really has been. And because of the model FSG have got, I think it does feel like everyone in that football club has really played a part.
Yeah, I mean, Jonesy, you were there last night, and... What strikes me when the players are talking after the game is there is a real semblance of sort of we have to do this for them, being the supporters. And I think that can sometimes come across as quite cliche and stuff like that. But there is sort of this collective role to play with everyone, with what Liverpool have done. And I think that getting it over the line for the club is what I'd say as a whole was monumental, in that you can be a player and you win a medal and you get the taste for a trophy and you sort of feel sort of justified for your efforts. But to have that as a fan, to sort of say, these deserve a league title and we're going to get them one, it just shows how much of a collective there is around the club.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you talk about Liverpool's, you know, sort of decline, in terms of winning league titles, probably the biggest crime of the last 30 years is that they became a club that would have nothing to get excited about for 2 months of a season. Mm. And, you know, that's just not... It's not what any football club should be about and what any set of supporters should be about. But for Liverpool, and having been spoiled rotten through the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, early part of the 90s, to be... I mean, we've all been there. I mean, I've covered games. You must have been at games, Neil. You must have been at games, Dan. You don't want to experience them again, do you? You know, Fulham at home with a backup goalkeeper in, and, you know, West Brom getting wins at Anfield and things like that. And just having... You always had the hope. Everyone always had the hope. Liverpool fans generally, I mean, apart from the you know, the lunatic fringe, which we all know and we all see regarding anything to do with the club. Liverpool fans always have hope, and they always did have hope, and they always went in with optimism. But I think the biggest crime of the club, or of the club, was that that optimism was just absolutely wriggled away through disappointment after disappointment and false dawn. I mean, you can remember starting seasons and thinking, got the team here, could probably challenge, could probably go for this. And then you get to Christmas and you think, oh, FA Cup run would be nice, wouldn't it? And then you get to March and you think, God, put a youngster into the team and let's just see if we can enjoy something for the last couple of weeks of the season. And for that, you know, if you think about when Jürgen Klopp took over, I remember being very keen to write an article when I worked at The Echo about this being the or not this, at the time, this would have been 2014-15, maybe the start of the next season. It was the most unpopular Liverpool team I could ever recall. There was nobody liked anyone in the team. You know, you'd talk about anyone, you go, well, Mignolet, oh, no, I don't like him. No, Sacco, no, I'm not having him. Lovren, no, Moreno, Klein, whatever. You know, there was maybe Coutinho was probably emerging a little bit as a star, but even he was one that had a lot of doubters. And you look at it now, you know, you do well to get a bad word out of a fan about anyone, really, if you boiled it down. And I think that's as big an achievement in my mind as the on-field stuff, is just reconnecting the fans with the players and with the club and giving them something that they can be proud of. And, you know, of course you'll get people moaning. There'll be people moaning this morning about the defending last night. There'll be people moaning if they go to Newcastle and look a bit jaded on Sunday, you know. But the general point is the fans love their club again. The fans love their team again. And if that's the case, no wonder the players love doing it for the fans.
All of this is... For me, Neil, I can say it's about purpose. To slightly be a little bit more existential about this, we go to football grounds because we want purpose. We want to see the potential of an end to something. And I think Jonesy's spot on in that we never had that for years. You know, we were sort of just going through the motions. We were sort of just turning up, and there was no purpose to what we were doing. And this manager, for all his positivity and all the amazing things he's done, he's given his people purpose, I'd say, which has sort of, it's changed hearts and minds, but it's lit a fire. And I think that's why when the medals are put down and when the confetti's sort of brushed away today, they are looking at what's the next one. And I think the next one is, well, all being well, we do this again, but we do it with them there.
On the latter part, I think absolutely. But I think the manager has given them purpose, or more accurately, he's offered them purpose because they've taken it. And the sort of conversations we're having right now, you could maybe have had in the aftermath of Madrid, when Sean started this off saying, well, this could still go one of two ways, you know, even then. On the league title thing, you know, for me, I think this is a group of footballers who, like none, ever, decided that they had to go and win this league, and that they had to do whatever it took to go and win this league. And whatever it took was in the context of the fact that they just got 97 points and fallen short. And for me, that is, you know, that could have gone one of two ways. You could easily have gone into your shell at that sort of point. You could have been awed by the size of that task. And why last night matters with all of its pomp is because it was for them. They'll say it was for us, but actually it was for them. It was for them to tell the story of what they'd achieved to one another and with one another. And for me, that's absolutely massive. You know, they decided that they had to win this league for us, and that's what they went and did. And they went and did it in the most, you know, I still think now we're guilty to an extent of overlooking what they did. They were played 27-1-26. Mm. And that is, you know, because we were living it and it was game by game, and because we were all feeling like, you know, even right up to the point of, we beat Manchester City in November, and, you know, as I've used this sort of thing in the past, if future Neil had come back to Neil on that night and said, but City go and win the next 19, as I said, yeah, of course they do. I wouldn't have doubted it for a second. You can go right the way through this season until that game against Manchester United, arguably, where there was still, by that point, does not include me. You know, I got a bit upset on the internet last night talking about Leicester away, because that was the one where I was absolutely certain after that point that there was no coming back and it was done. But you can go all the way to Manchester United at home before you've got to the point that 80-90% of the people have gone, this is in the bag. And that's one of the reasons why we've lost the scope of how incredible they were and what they did and the seriousness with which they took it. And you can use the cliche of 38 cup finals, and it's been used by a lot of different football managers, 6 cup finals at the end of the season to stay up or to get top four. You know, people have used that. No football team has ever lived that value like this one did. Literally no football team has ever decided that, yeah, no, actually it is that. And you see it in them, you see it every single time. And, you know, even the one game that they dropped points in early in the season, there's a split in the squad. You know, some members of that team on the pitch at that time, you get to see them are happy that Adam Lallana's got an equaliser, either because it's Adam Lallana or because it's Manchester United away. But there's another couple personified by Sadio Mane who were like, no, but the cup final's still going on here, lads. Go and get the ball. We've got this thing to do. because it's not about getting a point at Old Trafford. You might think that that's nice with a late equaliser, but we've got to keep going. We've got to do this thing together because we've got to do it for those people, but also we've decided, we've committed to it. And I think that's something which, because we all lived that, because we were in it, and in part because of the general discourse around the game and the season and Liverpool, because people wanted to talk about VAR or wanted to say the league wasn't as good, and finally, ultimately, a massive pandemic literally hit and tragically people die. Because of all of this, we've talked about other things, whereas, and it's boring and it doesn't make for good copy, but a lot, most words that are written about the Premier League 2019-2020 should be, my God, they were incredible, and we've never seen the like before, and we may never see the like again. How exactly did they do it? And I think, right, absolutely spot on to praise that manager, to praise him 100%. But look at the way he speaks about those players at times. He almost speaks about them like they're separate to him in this. He doesn't take credit for it. Like, he's overawed by the seriousness, by their dedication towards winning. You know, I think he all but said he'd have took a point at Wolves, but Roberto Firmino wasn't taking a point at Wolves. Those players weren't taking a point at Wolves. And I'd have took a point at Wolves, by the way. I was in the ground, absolutely terrified. I'd have took a point at Wolves, but they wouldn't. And I think that is what he is, what he's been about. But that's the opportunity he's given them, and they've taken it more than any football team has ever taken it because they thought they had to.
Sean, you referenced it as a mad game. It was certainly that. We'll try and do a bit of the match, shall we? Just touch on it for what it was. I had the feeling first off that it was arguably one of the most conventional we've seen at Anfield in recent times. In that it wasn't a Liverpool blitz, or it wasn't a game where absolutely nothing happened. It was teams having spells over moments of 45 minutes, and you could sort of break that into 5 and 10 minute spells. But I thought what you got to see in terms of if we were separating Liverpool from Chelsea was something we don't often touch on, and I thought it was how technically good Liverpool were in that first half and in part of the second half too. But just in terms of when they received the ball, the way they shaped the body, the way they opened the body, the way they create themselves 2 yards by just being able to sort of manoeuvre themselves and get themselves in positions. And, you know, we talk a lot about this team's honesty, its modesty, about how it works and stuff like that. But its ability to sort of technically go up a level when it needs to, I thought was on show last night.
Yeah, it's always interesting when two teams come together of a relatively similar level. And that sounds mad because we're miles ahead of them. Horrible lot. but in terms of ability, you know, it's not, you know, they're in the same sort of conversation. And when you've got a 3-4-3, in essence, meeting a 4-3-3, one manager normally might stick, sometimes both do. This is a game where both managers twisted, and especially, you know, the United results that they know about coming into it. Not that that will have changed their preparation and plans that much, but I think that almost gives them a bit of a free hit to a certain extent. And I think then you've always got that conversation. Are your front three going to go man for man against their back three? Yeah. What are you going to do when their wing backs get it? You know, are you going to risk a fullback coming out and getting exposed in behind? One of your wide midfield three have to come out, but that leaves space in the middle. But then for Chelsea, you know, if you can't win them second balls off Giroud, if you can't get the ball into your wing-backs and sort of play from there, you can then look terribly exposed, you know, as you saw with Roma going way back. And I think, actually, the first 10 minutes, I think Pep Guardiola will be looking at that, saying that's as good a first 10 minutes as anything Manchester City have done at Anfield under Guardiola. I thought Chelsea mixed the game up really well first 10 minutes. And I think, other than Naby Keita, it took Liverpool a bit of time. Chelsea had a big press on. Fabinho, Trent were under huge pressure and just weren't quite sharp enough. But Liverpool grew into it. I thought the biggest thing that Liverpool did was Fabinho, Van Dijk, Gomez and Naby Keita in particular really got a grip of the second balls in and around Giroud. Chelsea stopped getting anything through there. Naby Keita grew into the game massively. Fabinho and Trent just moved up another gear in terms of the quality, pace of their touch and passing. And once you got out of that sort of 10 minutes, I thought Chelsea lost a bit of that early intensity as well. and Liverpool were just at the absolute ruthless dismantling best in that period. And funny enough, when Chelsea got the goal back, I know I'm racing now, but when Chelsea get one back, I was saying at half time, this could end up a cricket score for Liverpool, because at 3-0, Chelsea are going, look, like, you know, we don't need to go out of here with a complete hiding. Whereas when it goes 3-1, you're going, hey, we get one. I've got five subs. Look at the strength of my bench. Could be game on this. So I thought if Chelsea don't go on to get a second, like, they'll leave that many spaces in behind. You know, you can argue with Salah and other things. We could have gone and got a lot more than five. But certainly in that first period, I think the second part of the game isn't really that tactically interesting in terms of what was going on. It's more what the managers both did to change it. But in the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, it was really intriguing.
They were committing numbers forward, Jonesy. I don't know how it looked in the ground, but they seemed to be a constant, even at times 4-on-3, that Chelsea were leaving. In terms of attack, they push a wing back right up, and they were committed to it. I think where they fell down, I don't know if you agree, I think where they fell down was sort of the box of two centre-backs and two centre-midfielders. And Azpilicueta was sort of playing as sort of an unorthodox right-back and centre-back at times, so he was kind of out of the equation. But I thought Zouma, who'd done all right, and Rudiger, and then Kovacic and Jorginho, they didn't want it. It looked like they didn't want to get out with the team, and it left the half spaces for Liverpool to play in.
Yeah, well, that's their weakest area, isn't it? They've got bad centre-back. Chelsea, they've conceded more goals than Brighton, I think, this season, haven't they? I think it's, 51, is it, or 52?
54.
54, there you go. I mean, it's for a team that gets an awful lot of praise, that's a worrying trend, isn't it? I also thought, I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight when he comes on and does it, but what was Christian Pulisic doing on the bench last night? What were they possibly... What were they lacking, Chelsea, last night? They were lacking someone who had a bit of cutting edge in the final third. You know, they've got Mason Mount, who's a nice footballer, but isn't going to hurt you. You've got Giroud, who obviously needs people quick and lively often. And they've got Willian, who's a good footballer, to be fair. But, I mean, the change, as soon as they brought on their better player, was night and day. I thought Chelsea were... They showed a few Liverpool angles to it, you know, especially with Reece James in the first half. You know, they were working that overload quite well, where they were triangle, 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 bang, there you go, out. And I think Keita took a 10, 15 minutes probably to get used to the fact that you're playing left side of a midfield three and you probably have to get out there quicker. You know, he let him put a couple of crosses in that were unchallenged and could have resulted. I think Mount had one, didn't he, that he headed over the bar, and then he had a shot, didn't he, James, into the air. He nearly hit the speakers, I think, on the podium, didn't he, and the cop. But look, Chelsea are a nice footballing side, but they, like Manchester United, like probably like Arsenal, like Tottenham, they lack Liverpool's intensity when it gets down to it, and when it gets to it, you know, Liverpool finding their rhythm and finding their form, they don't have the physical capability to cope with it. And Kovacic and Jorginho are a good example of that. They didn't have Kante. That would have obviously helped them, I think, massively in terms of just handling that wave. And then the other thing that they don't have that Liverpool have is they don't have good centre-backs. And I think they were... I mean, the Wijnaldum goal in particular is just, you know, schoolboy stuff. I think they're just... They're a side that's a work in progress. They remind me of quite a lot of Liverpool, probably 16, 17, in that regard. That... I think Lampard would be banking on Ziyech and Pulisic and Timo Werner just adding an extra dimension. And then after that, I think he'll start to try and put the foundations in place with someone who isn't Antonio Rudiger or Kurt Zouma or whoever else. Build from front to back.
I agree with Neil's assessments of Chelsea's centre-halves. The one thing I'd say is, with the exception of that goal from the corner, where, by the way, I think the letdown by Kovacic, something that would concern me if I was supporting Chelsea, is I don't think the centre-halves are ever that bad for any of it. And the goalkeeper's part of this as well. Because I think what the situation is that I don't think there's any confidence in that side and its defensive setup. And I think that's in part because of the personnel, but I think it might also be in part literally because of the setup. And I don't think those players have got any confidence in one another, particularly when they're defending. I don't think any of them, and to me last night Chelsea looked, and it's easy to say this when you've obviously put five past a team, but to me they didn't look like a team that particularly enjoy defending. They don't take very much pleasure in the enterprise, and I think you get to see it through a lot of the game. And I think that you can say that not just about the three who start in at the heart of the defence, or even to an extent the goalkeeper, but I think you can also say about the four that go across the midfield in the 3-4-3. I think you look at the left-sided centre wing-back, Alonso is an attacking wing-back who's never looked...
He's why they play that system, isn't he? I mean, he is. They can't play him as a left-back because he doesn't do enough.
So you look at... Yeah, but you end up looking at the whole sides, and I think this is where the players are informing the manager, but I think the manager's informing the players as well. You look at that whole side, you don't fancy particularly any of the centre-halves in a two. The one defender you feel is reliable is Azpilicueta, so he gets pushed and pulled all over the pitch to try to put whatever they deem the fire is out wherever, and he can't go forever. He's been at that club now for a long, long time, Azpilicueta, and I think he's shown a bit of signs of decline himself. They're not quite sure about James. James will be a really good player, but at the minute they're using him right wing back, and I thought him and Azpilicueta actually dealt with Mane pretty well on the night overall. I think that they both do relatively okay. So you're accommodating a left wing back in a sense because you don't trust any of your options at left back. We're saying we don't like the centre-halves and we're not sure about the goalkeeper. But within all of that, I don't think, and I think Kante would obviously make a difference in there because I think he's the ultimate midfield two footballer. I think what he gives you is that ability to make it feel as though you're playing with 12 because of his ability to get around the pitch all areas and snuff things out. So he would have made a difference. But then looking at Jorginho and Kovacic in there as well, neither of them want to do, and I like them both as players in different ways, but neither of them want to do muck and bullets. This is how we get through the next 5 or 10 minutes, sort of centre midfield play. And I think there's the problems are really quite significant, to be honest with you. Next season, with the acquisitions they've already made, and if they get Champions League football, they'll whack a lot of teams. I think they'll whack a lot of teams, and there'll be a lot of talk of Chelsea of this and Chelsea of that right the way through the season. But there's so much work that needs to be done, and I don't think it is just you produce one footballer and it changes it. I think you're looking there, as I say, they pick eight players who are in the front three, and you can even argue he gets the front three wrong. But I don't think any of the eight players, the back eight, if you see what I mean, and what Chelsea could do with. And I like a lot of them as individuals. I think Zouma would be good if he played next to Virgil van Dijk. I think he'd look great if he played next to Virgil van Dijk. And I'm, as I say, and that's without, and the big thing about this is, with the exception of the corner, I don't think you can point the finger at any of them and go, that's a massive mistake, that's a rick, you shouldn't be doing that. To ship five in those circumstances, with a lot of other good chances, by the way, from a Liverpool point of view, or chances to create chances, that'd be hugely worrying.
You can't, but they're all positionally awful. I'm not just talking for the games. I'm not for the goals. I'm talking throughout the game. Positionally, they don't want to take risks.
They don't clear the lines.
They don't want to take risks. And this is where I think they're in a really, really perilous situation next season, is that it looks like they're going front heavy. It looks like, you say, Neil, they might whack a few teams. But if they start next season and there's just that chink of armour in the first couple of games where someone's playing through the lines, where they look front heavy, but they're just getting played through really, really easily the other way, I think that's the data for every team coming up against them, going, this is how you play against these. You turn them round, you play in those half spaces, and we just see who gambles more.
But I think that's the manager and the coaching staff as much as it's the players. I think when you're talking there about the positional stuff, having seen Chelsea a lot, and one of those things, and this is why this always gets a little bit difficult, is, are we setting these up, from a coaching point of view, is he setting them up a certain way because he doesn't think they're that good, and so therefore it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, or is he setting them up in a way which, could he do more work with them? Could he get a bit more out of them? Is there a way to do it a little bit differently? And I think it's as much the latter as it is the former. I think a lot of those footballers, they're not great, don't get me wrong, but they are, they could all be useful if somebody else was coaching them, to be quite honest with you. And there's a little body of evidence that a few of them have been useful, genuinely useful in a defensive sense, when somebody else has been coaching them. And I think that's going to be the key question, because if people do indeed say, well, there's a way to play through these, and I think this is one of the reasons why he changes his shape a lot, because I think he doesn't want the data to be there. I think he doesn't want there to be a, this is what you're going to do against this side sort of setup. And that's perfectly valid. But again, over the longer term, that'll sort of lead to more and more confusion. I'm intrigued by them, to be honest with you. I'm intrigued by every single aspect of them, not least because, as Neil says, it isn't just a matter of they bring Pulisic on and they improve, but he brings Tammy Abraham on, and Abraham was brilliant for half an hour, almost unplayable.
They're arguably the only side in the league. I was thinking about this last night. They're arguably the only side of the league who can change a front three completely. Yep. That's what they did. You know, people were pulling their hair out about Liverpool yesterday. They didn't bring one player on, they brought three. Yeah, Jonesy, yeah. You mentioned it before. They completely changed not only the front three, but how they play. Yeah. It was almost as if he had two front threes to choose from, and he went with the more industrious one.
We'll have a third next year because he's got Ziyech, he's got Werner.
This is mad. It's crazy.
And I mean, it'll be exciting to watch, definitely. But I don't think I'll be backing him to have a much better goal difference than he got this season, to be honest, because they've loaded up the wrong area of the pitch for me. If you're looking at that and saying to me, we need an attacking wide player, that's what Chelsea need to sign this summer, I'm saying you've got him there, Pulisic, who, I mean, what a player, what a footballer he is, and what an option he'd be for Liverpool. And look, Chelsea are trying to replace him because they want to go and buy someone who's a bit more in vogue or, you know, available at this point in time.
I think just on that, on the front three replacement thing, I do think that if there's something from the game which is genuinely interesting, is if the five subs perseveres, I think you might see a bit of that, not just from Chelsea, but from any side who can do it. The idea of being able to completely remodel a part of the pitch in one move is I think that must be so, so difficult to play against. And the three off and the three on, they are profoundly different footballers, as Neil was saying before. They are massively different footballers. And, you know, for me, I think it was that more than anything. And I think it takes us 10, 15 minutes to get to grips with what the challenge is now, to be honest with you. And I think that that's something to really bear in mind, because the idea of being able to say, well, you've been dealing all right with Giroud, it's not Giroud anymore, it's this player who's still really physical, but watch, he can turn you around. So where do you want your line to be? Make that decision on the fly. By the way, there's this lad who's now playing left wing. The previous one's a bit more of an attacking midfielder who's got a touch and a playmaker. This one will run at you and run at you and run at you. Watch this. And Hudson-Odoi for Willian. You know, they are actually quite, whilst they will be written down both in a Championship manager-esque way, as forwards are, they are profoundly different footballers. And at times that might actually be, you know, to... You know, William might well be a better all-round player, but suddenly now the threat of Hudson-Odoi is massively different. And I do think that you might see, if the five subs things continues, I thought it was amongst the best use of the five subs thing I've seen. And it's not rocket science, to be quite honest with you. You know, I'm sure he hasn't been sat up with his coaches thinking about the plan. And if anything, it might have been to keep the other three as fresh as he can ahead of Sunday, because they've got a massive game then as well. It was the idea of maybe resting those legs. But I wonder if he's hit on something there that you might see a bit more of from the sides where they've got players of interchangeable quality, if not interchangeable qualities. You might see people decide, no, we'll completely shake up. If we can make five subs, we'll completely shake up our attack and threat in one move with half an hour left and see if that changes it.
Sean, I think we get to see why, from a Liverpool perspective, Naby Keita's in the team. I think there was a lot more of him sort of playing a little bit closer to Fabinho than maybe when Alden was the other side, especially when the ball's with the keeper in the centre-half. So I don't know whether there's maybe a bit of Arsenal data there that they've looked to rectify in terms of just having an option for a pass. But, I mean, you talked earlier about second balls. I do think he's excellent in around the time that Chelsea just have a little 5-10 minute spell. I think he's really good at sort of getting Liverpool back on the ball very cutely.
Yeah, we were having a bit of a debate about who we'd want on a drop ball for Liverpool. And all my mates were going Virgil, because, like, what can't Virgil do? And I was like, that's very valid. But there's part of me that would probably go for Naby Keita. Yeah, it's funny, actually. We were also saying the disciplinary record, isn't it? You know, he is becoming a slightly different player, you suspect, to what we've seen in Germany and because of the system and everything. Yeah, definitely everything that you said is correct. I think in spells, he still plays in spells like all of our games seem to go and like a lot of the players do. But it's interesting after the match that when Klopp's doing his interview with Sky, he's one of the first names that he talks about in terms of next season. He mentions Curtis Jones. But he, the tone of his voice, everything changes about Naby, and you can see that they must, and rightly so, think that if you can get Naby Keita playing 30-odd league games next season at a good level of what his ability is, that adds to this Liverpool team. He's just got so much talent and such a high ceiling. And I think you saw a cameo last night of all the things that he can do. You know, he fills in into the left-back zone really well and tidies up bits and pieces. He can wriggle out of tight spots. He plays with his head up like Fabregas. You know, very different players, but he plays with his head on a swivel. He's got a picture of where everyone is. And the problem when you've got a player like that, when they've got that much ability, it comes down to decision-making then, because a player like that has so many options. And, you know, did he dribble? Did he pass? Did he play combinations? Did he shoot? And I mean, look at his finishing ability and his shooting ability. So, you know, you've got a player there that I don't think he warrants us building a midfield around him yet, because I think he's got to do a bit more in terms of his availability and a few other bits and pieces. But with the talent he's got, I think you look at the age of Henderson, Milner, obviously the situation with Wijnaldum, but obviously you look at the length of time he's been here. Keita's someone that in the next 2, 3, 4 seasons, if he carries on, if he takes this to another level, you could probably end up building the midfield around him and Fabinho.
Another one, Neil Atkinson, for me was Milner, and he doesn't pull up any trees when he comes onto the pitch, but what you see is sort of why you need a James Milner type of player in a title winning team. The ability to just question everything that the referee does for 10, 15 minutes it's massive, because Mariner's getting a lot wrong and sort of doing a lot on his terms, and then there's just a lot of Milner going, what, you're giving that, are you? You're really giving that? All right, we'll have the next one. We'll have the next one, and then we'll see where we are after that. And he sort of gets a grip of the referee, which I just thought was fascinating.
He does. He also gets a grip of the referee by virtue of the fact that he takes up a lot of the referee's attention. He came on and just walloped people, and I was very into it. He just decided he was just going to wallop people for a period of time, and practically everything he does for the first 10 minutes he gets on the pitch is a foul.
Well, that's interesting considering what Pulisic does for their goal when he comes on.
Yeah, oh no, exactly. And I think he's watched that Milner and he's thought, I'm not standing for this here. And I think you get to see, you know, any time anyone tries to get motor on his side of the pitch, he's all but jumping on the back, to be quite honest with you. And I'm absolutely fine with it. This is the opposite of a criticism. I thought it was great. I thought it was what we needed. It broke it up a little bit, and it stemmed their momentum. And it basically just made he just went on to make it really difficult for them to play a game of footy. We've talked in the past about Milner, that he'll be the sub that you need him to be for a period. And I think that's what he does go on and do in that game scenario. And I think he's important to Liverpool getting out with the 3 points, to be honest with you. I think it is it's one where I think it's interesting they pass him the armband. And I normally don't like that sort of thing. But I think, again, this is part of your point, Dan. I think what him then having the armband does is it says, I'm going to talk to this referee as much as I want. And in doing so as well, the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take time out of the game. I'm going to stop them from taking a quick free kick. Why? Because I'll be talking to him, so the referee can't take the free kick quick. And all the little bits of Sunday league, bits and pieces that football matches still need, even at the level that once played at with 8 goals and fantastic football, he's still got them and he's still prepared to use them. And I think he does make a difference. And I think he was, you know, I think he's been missed in the last few games. I think we talk quite easily about Henderson being missed, but I think that Milner's been missed as well. And I think he's missed in the senses of, you know, a lot of his quality, but also in the senses of someone who just is quite happy to sort of to pitch the game scenario as to what it needs to be.
I think it's a massive, Jonesy, because I think what we see with this team is it's managed games through personality and mentality. This isn't a Rodgers side who will play 3 different formations in one half to try and rectify something. If they're trying to change something, they'll often look to a certain player who has certain attributes but also has a certain way in which he brings something personality-led to this team. And I do think Neil's right. I think when you say you've missed him and the likes of Henderson, and even, you know, a fully fit Lallana to that extent, can sort of just bring a way to mentally manage a game as opposed to sort of changing formations, changing systems quite overtly.
Yeah, and then you add in the fact that you had the legs, didn't you, by with Curtis Jones and Oxlade-Chamberlain, who were both, you know, in the penalty area in the 90-odd minute. to wrap up the game. So I think, you know, Neil talked about Frank Lampard using the subs well. I think Jürgen, in the end, did well. You know, you can say that a bit of the shape went out of the game when Wijnaldum and Keita go out of midfield, which is what you'd expect, really, isn't it, when you take out two of your midfield three. But, I mean, I remember I did a piece on Milner quite recently, and part of it was speaking to Stephen Warnock, and the thing that he said, I don't know, apart from he said he's, you know, he's a very underrated technical footballer, he said the best attribute he sees in him is his ability to solve problems quicker than anyone else in a game. And that might be their left-back's weak, get at him. It might be, you know, second balls, you know, we need to start picking up more second balls. Or it might just be, these are having it far too easy. And, you know, this Hudson-Odoi, he's only 18. Watch what happens when I hit him. You know, watch. Let's see if he wants to run at me after I've, as Neil said, really climbed on his back and wrestled him to the floor. You know, or it could be, you know, look, this game's two end-to-end. We need to, this needs breaking up this. I know, you know, we need to start taking our time over the free kick. I mean, there was a corner. I mean, Pat, I was sat next to Pat Nevin, would you believe? So I think I don't know who he was doing it for. It wasn't the BBC. It was certainly a Chelsea-angled commentary because he was like, you know, he was absurd, to be honest, some of the things he was saying. But he was saying at 4-3, Liverpool have absolutely gone. And Liverpool got a corner, I think, and Trent went over to take it. And it took about 4 minutes out the game, it felt like, because he wandered over and he put it in. And Chelsea ended up on a bit of a counter-attack at the end of it. But that, I think a lot of that comes to Milner. And if you ask me to think about his biggest contributions in recent years, I think one of the biggest ones is the time wasting in the Champions League final. And the fact that he just sort of went, listen, you know, just get through this sort of 1 or 2 minutes, take a bit of the sting out of this, get these tails down of Spurs, and let's just reset from there. And I think there was a bit of that last night, certainly when he got to 4-3, I think you got the impression that Liverpool sort of said, listen, jib this off, like this has gone far enough, let's just finish this off. And, you know, if you're going to talk about a fitting way to finish a campaign, I have to say, what a fitting way for Liverpool to finish that game last night in terms of, you know, just a, oh, you got a chance, you got it. No, there you go. Bang, down the other end. Brilliant goal. All ends up. And I know Sean mentioned Curtis Jones there. I tell you, you can mark my words now. This kid's a problem. This kid's going to cause problems for that midfield next season, because every time he gets a chance, he makes a significant contribution to the game, whatever the situation.
Just on that, just quickly on Jones, what I think is so impressive for that, for instance, for that counter attack, is he doesn't play the big ball, he plays the small ball. Yeah. And I think what he's been, when he's got chances in this little period of lockdown, he stuck the ball in the back of the net, he's in the box there, as Neil says, but I've been really, really impressed with what you can call, in inverted commas, his mundane football. And that's why he will cause problems for this side. And it's almost as though Curtis has worked this out, that if I don't show this fella I can do all this, I won't get to do all that as well. Yeah. And I think that's massive.
2 years ago, he swings his left foot at that ball. Curtis Jones, when that comes in, 18 months ago, he swings his left foot at that ball and tries to take the top corner out. This time, he's given a little look over his shoulder and let it go. It's a brilliant... It's the folly of assists, that, isn't it? That's an assist. He won't get it, but it was.
Yeah, we said after the Villa game that I think the key thing with Curtis Jones is you want a player like that to not be too overcoached with the system. And that's difficult for Liverpool, because you look at the system and the machine that they've created. Because what you don't want Curtis to do is start going, I'll almost pretend that I'm a sitting midfield player, and I'll worry about the spaces, and I'll worry about the space I vacated and make them runs. And one of the, you know, I think he's got to look at it the other way. I'd be taking the reins off him a little bit when he's involved, and I'd want to see what he naturally does. I'd want to, because his biggest prowess really is his smell of what's going on in and around the opposition box, and he's got to learn when the pass is on, when it's the right time for him to shoot, all them kind of things. But his ability to score goals from that zone, I think he'll naturally over time just get better at all the, you know, the nuts and bolts of what he needs to do in that midfield. I'd rather see Liverpool take the reins off him a bit and then work with him on the video analysis to pick apart little bits and go, well, you could do that, rather than all of a sudden try and make him something he's not and then re-add that into his game, if you know what I mean. I think we've got to let... I think we are... Not, it doesn't matter really, Liverpool fans, but I'd like to see the club allow him to make mistakes, to put him into games where he's got a good chance of making success, where there's not as much pressure on the counter-attack. in terms of the quality of opposition you're coming up against, and I take the reins off him and coach him, you know, build the plane whilst you're flying it a little bit with him. And I think if you do that, I think you could accelerate his development.
Start from Newcastle.
Yeah, the good thing as well is, I think with Curtis is, I think he reminds me an awful lot of Coutinho when he was younger in terms of his on-the-ball stuff. You know, he can just dribble past two or three quite quickly, and he's got a long-range shot on him, and he's got real quality. But he's got, even if his defensive side isn't natural or isn't great, he's got physical attributes that can sort of, it'll get him able to defend, you know, it'll create that ability. And I know he gave a ball away last night when he was under pressure. I think he was down on the touchline near the dugouts, and there was like two or three behind him. But you see that it's not a problem for him, you know, having men on his back. And you see that with young players. That Mason Mount's a good example for Chelsea. They have to play him outside on the left because they don't trust him in that midfield battle against the Fabinho and a Naby Keita and all that, when people are buzzing around him, because they think if someone goes shoulder to shoulder with him, they'll probably have him off. I think Curtis has got, you know, a greater sort of stature in there that will enable him to thrive, but also crucially get games in the centre of midfield or in a midfield three. Whereas in the past, maybe with a Ben Woodburn or a Harry Wilson or whoever else, you'd be sticking them outside and saying, look, go and learn your game in a different position. And then maybe, as Sean says, you do lose a little bit of the sort of the things that have made you what you are up to that point.
Okay. Thank you very much to Neil Atkinson, Neil Jones and Sean Rogers. Will be back for the final review of the season, this long and drawn out season, after Newcastle United on Sunday. We'll see you then. Take care.